I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. It's your host, Andy Johnson, and I'm joined by DJ Pyhowski of Scratch and Brendan Porath of SB Nation. Welcome on, guys.
Hey, man. Good to be here.
Yeah.
Running it back again.
So
I don't want to think Tron, you know, needs to worry about his roster spot here, but... Happy to fill in again.
Well, Tron's got a, you know, he's got bigger engagements. He's got, you know, he's got big things going on. So we,
big timer.
He is. But you know, that's part of his pro-trad holding. So we respect
Manny Fresh.
Him. Mm-hmm.
So, I think this is good though. This is like when Bob Ryan sits in on PTI. That's good. I love it.
Just a little some new takes, new perspective, you know, a little less spicy, a little more nuance. So
that's just gonna make him even spicier.
Yeah, might make him spicy at me, but you know. So Brooks Koepka, your 2017 U.S. Open champ. What do you guys think?
Man, I don't know. It's one of those things. I think that like, there's nobody that's surprised that it happened. I don't think. I mean, he's a player that's played great at, you know, big manly golf courses, which this certainly was. And, you know, he's been in the moment. He's been close in majors. I mean, it's kind of the progression that you expect from these guys where they show a bunch of talent. They, you know, get close a couple times and then they finally break through. And like, yeah, I mean, it kind of turned into a bit of a snooze fest, unfortunately. I think, you know, Brooks hitting some of the shots he did down the stretch made it fun to watch, not necessarily, you know, interesting from a competitive standpoint, but it was fun to just see some of the shots he pulled off, some of the putts he made. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it to borrow a phrase, I think it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I see... You know, to borrow a line, many people are saying that they had this as like a long shot call, but like, you know, it's not a long shot for anyone who knows anything about this. It's as expected. It's no more shocking than I would say if Ricky won today, or you know, Thomas won today, or maybe even, you know, if Spieth won. Like, yeah, Spieth has more name recognition, but we've kind of, you know, Koepka only has one PGA Tour win, which, you know, maybe, you know, kind of the golf nerds, he's got too much of a cult following, you know, that's not commensurate with one, you know, Waste Management Phoenix Open win. But, you know, I think everybody saw this as a possibility, and it's not really a long shot win. It was, you know, the day lacked a little sizzle there, you know, but him streaking down the back nine, and maybe that's an old man media complaint, Andy, that it lacked sizzle, but you know, him streaking on the back nine was cool. That was fun to watch, just like JT the prior day on the back nine was fun to watch. You know, that's what I would ask you, Andy, is kind of like, you know, you talked about how this set up for every player, but what did you think of, like, I thought 15 was like a great example of that. You know, it's hardest hole in the course. Brooks is, everyone just says power, like he's a masher. And then he plays, you know, it makes a birdie on 15, you know, with 356. That was kind of all strategy and touch. So I don't know. Do you think that like affirms, that's going to affirm like the lazy take that this was just a bomber's course?
Hey, I've already heard it. You know, we expected a bomber to win, but like Brooks won because he played the best, you know, like he didn't hit any bad shots. You know, it was fairway and then green. And then, you know, he rolled in some putts and, you know, you look down, you know, 15 or, you know, 14, 15, 16. That was, you know, those were just incredible shots he hit over and over again to make birdies there and basically put the whole tournament to sleep. I mean, 14, you know, easy birdie for him there, and then 15, that wedge shot was just so good. I mean, one of the things I don't think Fox did was to give enough of a narrative of how difficult 15 was playing, because, I mean,
some brownie points.
Yeah, it was a full shot harder than the day before, and a half a shot harder than the first two rounds, and it was already a tough hole. So, you know, for him to hit that iron, it's a really hard driving hole with that iron because it's really narrow, and then he hits a wedge right up there to this small back shelf. I mean, then he goes and birdies the next hole, which is a tough little par three. I think, he was the best player this week. He hit, 90% of his greens, 88% of his greens, yeah. Missed 10 greens for the week. I mean, I think it was cool, though. You saw Harmon was there playing a completely different style of game. I mean, I know he's not short, as everybody wants him to say, but he's not long. You know, if not many people expected him there. You saw Bill Haas is another one. He's in the top five, completely different style player. You know, Patrick Reed, 13th, oh so close to his first top 10 in a major.
I thought his Ryder Cup pants were going to, you know, carry him to that top 10, first ever.
Yeah. I mean, I think the crazy thing, I think people overlooked Koepka's major record coming in.
Totally.
You know, he's got a top 10 at the British. He had a top five at the U.S. Open and two top fives at PGA's coming into this week. Like, you know, that's far better than JT's major record. It's probably about the same level as Ricky's. And, you know, he was flying under the radar for no reason because he was playing great golf all spring.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think, you know, I was looking earlier today and we're kind of texting back and forth with both of you guys and looking at that cluster of guys that was, you know, there was whatever, five, six guys that were kind of within a shot or two. And, you know, it's a major Sunday and one of those guys is at least is going to get just vaporized. And I mean, it was kind of hard to pick out who that person was going to be. And, you know, I was kind of thinking, like, looking at Brooks, I'm like, maybe, but you know, it's just, yeah, he's been there quite a few times, like more times than people realize on the Sundays of these things. Ryder Cup is another example too. And
so Koepka was the only player that shot four straight under par rounds.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, it's hard to beat.
He played the best, and he was the most consistent. He was never in trouble all week, you know?
Yeah, you kind of kept waiting for him to lose it or to kind of hit some wayward balls or something. But I mean, he was just never in trouble. Like, you know, he had maybe had a couple lengthy par putts. Like that was when he's making bogey. He's not out there making doubles and the kind of stuff that knocks you out of contention. I mean, he just was kind of impossible to catch.
He bludgeoned it.
Yeah.
Do you think that? I mean, I don't know. Do you think that was kind of why he won? Did he hit the right angle? Or do you think he won it because he hit it, whatever, 379 yards on 18 and that kind of stuff?
So it was interesting. I heard one of his, one of his post-round interviews, and he talked about how, like, he just was hitting driver and hitting it far, and he hadn't hit anything more than a 7-iron, you know, didn't play long. And I think it was there was a lot of different ways to play the course. You know, I think I've written a lot about it, but his way, he went out there, took advantage of the wide fairways, and hit the driver spectacularly well, you know, where he did not miss, you know, and that's what DJ, what Rory, and what Jason Day did was they didn't hit the ball well, you know, they missed a lot. And if you don't miss and you're hitting drivers well and you're hitting 8-iron, 9-iron wedge, 7-iron, and all these other guys are hitting 6-iron, 5-iron, 4-irons into greens, like your birdie putts are going to be shorter and you've got a lot less chance of missing greens and a lot less chance of making bogey.
I thought watching him this week and just kind of his, you know, just the fact that he never did miss and he was just zoning for 72 straight holes, it felt a lot like watching Jason Day a couple years ago. It just feels like a super similar style, and it's almost like these two guys that when they're on, they're just like fully optimized machines that just like can't miss. You know what I mean? I don't know if you got that. And I kind of felt the same way as I feel when I'm watching Jason Day, which is like, man, I know this is like so impressive and awesome, but for some reason I'm just like not that into it.
Yeah, you definitely felt that way more even than the power was like the putting, the back to back on 15 and 16, where like just that trademark Day, like pouring them in from whatever, like 15 feet to like put the gas down and, you know, grind it out, you know, just grind everyone else to dust. I thought like 15 was like 10 feet coming back down.
Yeah, that was 16, a slick putt.
That was a hard putt.
16 was a pretty big, you know, bender, you know, and that was whatever, 15 or 17 feet. I can't remember. But, you know, that's like trademark Day, just mash and then, you know, be just like a machine on the green, like you said.
You know, that was Day pre blade collar.
I know.
That's true. Wow.
I don't know.
No majors for the blade collar.
Yeah, Brooks is defiant, and I kind of applaud him in that regard. And defiantly anti-blade, and you saw like those little bubble boys, you know, the whatever Tron called them, like the there were so many different takes, like slushy machine, gender reveal. You know, Rory and Jason Day kind of ejected early, but you know, Nike boy Brooks, defiantly anti-blade, and he's there with the trophy. Makes you think.
Something I saw Jonathan Wall tweet yesterday that I thought was so interesting is Brooks' no equipment deal
this year. Yeah, I didn't realize that.
He made himself a lot of money today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is curious. I wonder what the trade-off is with, like, you know, if he, like, what the incentives are if you win a major on those equipment deals. Like, those things stack up, but I mean, I don't know what is. Do you know what's in his bag? Like,
he I know he has one Nike like, club.
Really? Fleetwood like was playing that Nike driver all week. Yeah. It's awesome.
I saw someone tweet like they're gonna have to start making these clubs again if he wins. Yeah, I don't remember exactly who said it. But I think I saw TaylorMade Woods. I'm not sure. I don't want to give any kind of unpaid for brand advertising here.
Yeah, it's
speculation.
It's a big no-no on the Fried Egg Pod. It's
yeah, I'm not in the pocket of Big Carlsbad.
So Brooks, 27, top five, two top fives in PGA. Like, I mean, he's gonna win one of those. It seems like.
Yeah.
Top 10 at an Open, which should fit his game really well if he gets the right side of the draw. And U.S. Opens should be, I mean, like, is this the guy? I mean, like, how many? I honestly thinking about when I was just writing about this a little bit is like, this guy could be one of the guys that wins 3-4 majors.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think, you know, I don't know if it was lessened by like the lack of presence, you know, chasing him just because like JT and Ricky kind of faded, but like his round today was outrageous. It was a 67. And yeah. I don't know like why, if it just kind of like why people were not like freaking out the way they were maybe with Hideki. Hideki's was around of the day, 66. And then after that, it was Brooks. And he was in the second to last group.
Right.
And he shot a 67. I'm not sure like we're giving that number like the proper credit just because maybe like no one was kind of pushing him. You know, it was just him.
I mean, but Harmon was right there, and then he vaporized him.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And they maybe that's why, too, because there was just, like, no one kind of keeping pace, and all of a sudden it got boring. I don't know. It was odd. I don't think we're giving that 67 enough credit.
I think sometimes when you, you know, when you win by one and you come and you birdie the last hole or something, it just feels like a much better round than when you just shoot a flawless 67. You know what I mean? Like winning by four almost hurts. I don't know if this makes any sense, but I mean, it almost hurts like how we look at the round because it just doesn't feel close. And it just feels like he was completely in control the whole time rather than actually like responding to punches or something like that, which I think is kind of what you're talking about.
Right.
I think it's so interesting too, because, like, you know, it was one of the most packed leaderboards and bunched leaderboards. It had big names. It had, you know, it had Ricky and JT. Fleetwood is a, you know, becoming a, you know, star in Europe. And this guy, this guy just blew them all out to sea.
It is funny, man. Like, I forget who I was talking about this. It might have been earlier in our pre-tournament podcast. But just look at the last, 16, 20 majors, something like that. Like, the guys who are winning these things, you know, there have been a lot of pack leaderboards, and it hasn't been the no-name guys that emerge out of those packs, like, almost ever. I mean, we're joking about it, and, like, you know, the biggest quote-unquote no-name guy was Danny Willett, who was, like, number 15 in the world or something when he won.
Right.
And it's like, man, these guys are just – to win one of these tournaments, man, you got to be just an absolute horse.
That's what, like, the whole, like, oh, you got a long shot. Like, I had Brooks. Like, that's what, like, bugs me. Like, and maybe that's just the nature of kind of the whatever. This is, like, the post-Tiger era where, like, anyone who wasn't Tiger was, you know, I had him. I got – that was, like, a good call because I didn't pick Tiger. But, like, all these guys, you know, we said, like, the last seven first-time winners save for Willett. But Willett was, like, a stud at the time. You know, he's not right now, but he was a stud when he won the Masters. Like, they're all – completely, you know, realistic, no fluke, like, totally reasonable champions, and nothing is shocking about this. And I think maybe that's kind of just, like, how we're adjusting to this, like, post-Tiger era where, you know, if it's a guy that maybe, like, Skip Bayless has never heard of, it's all of a sudden, like, some stunner, you know, Cinderella story. But we haven't had any of those.
I have to say, John McKee. Skip was right. A tall player won.
That's true. All the short players kind of faded at the end.
Isn't he 6 feet? I mean, come on.
I think Brooks, is he that short? That's not short, but he seems bigger than that.
He does seem bigger than that. He's built like a brick shit house, but I don't know.
He actually wanted to play baseball. I don't know if you guys heard
that. Oh,
I heard athletics aren't in his family, but I didn't know about that one.
You know, I think we've talked enough about Brooks.
What about Girlfriend Gate? You have any thoughts on that? Does that fit your, you know?
I think that's what Andy's audience is really into.
Golf architectural.
Yeah, I think your audience is really big into, like, the off-the-course lifestyle choices of these guys.
Tell you what, it's amazing how many people, like, there's some serious, like, bloodhounds out there rummaging through the Instagram archives within seconds. Ridiculous.
It's whatever, you know.
It's, he is cool. 6 feet, by the way.
It's wow. Cool and all neat, right. And fun. But curious who you guys are thinking in terms, like, who's your most pleasant surprise this week? Like, what player?
I think for me it was, and granted, you know, today's round went a long way, but I think it was Hideki. That was awesome to watch some of the shots he was hitting. And, like, you know, I think we were saying earlier, you know, he's just done in by his putting so often. And it was just cool to see him, you know, hole some putts when they really mattered and not fade away and not make, you know, miss short chances and all that kind of stuff. I thought it was, I'm so pumped for him to win one of these things, which obviously doesn't seem like it's very far off.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, yeah, when he walked up the 18th green, I was just kind of, like, flabbergasted. Like, God, this guy's such a killer. Like, I love watching this guy. 66, just kind of wasn't really on TV until, like, the back nine, just fires a 66. Like, a day after, it, or 2 days after, you know, he could have shot maybe 63. You know, he burned some edges on Friday.
By the way, he opened with 74 in the first round.
That's right.
And then shot 12 under for the tournament.
So, I don't know. I mean, I guess – I'm going to Harmon was obviously so fun. I mean, he's kind of, he's not going to give you, like, a ton of, like, fist pumps, which is cool, but he's cool to watch, I think. And, you know, he had really no major kind of results. You know, he hadn't done a ton at the US Open, but he's cool. I tweeted about it, you know, the X-Man when he finished, and it looks like he just missed, like, a Masters exemption, but he was cool to follow. Like, I got into him kind of randomly last year at the web finals event, and you know, because he had already got his card. It was just, I don't know, and some web guys tipped me off saying he was on a run. So I followed him.
Well, no, he got his card through finals.
Right. So he was cool to watch this week in his first, you know, ever U.S. Open. He's in double digit under par, which they said would win, what, all the two U.S. Opens? So he's cool to watch.
What I was impressed with, he shoots at 66. He shoots 73, which wasn't bad backing that up, you know, and that was,
right,
you know, and then he comes back. He played great. Most guys, you know, most of the younger guys kind of faded on the weekend, you know, like Cameron Champ faded. You know, who else was up there? Basically guys that, Jeff, you know, you don't expect there usually fade, yeah, away. And he was there till the end. You know, I was impressed, as much as I want to say Trey Mullinax, my boy, but, Tommy Fleetwood, because,
yeah, that's
like
what I was going to say too.
You know, he hit some like really bad shots and had some moments where it could have gone really off the rails quickly, but it never seemed to, like, he never seemed to let go of the rope, if that makes sense. You know, like, you know, when he had that kind of disaster on 18 yesterday, but then hit that like unbelievable chip back up to save bogey after, you know, playing ping pong. And then today, you know, on 4, he puts the ball off the green and you're like, oh boy, this could get out of hand. And then he, you know, manages to get up and down there, save bogey. But like, you know, you never felt like he was going to win, but you never felt like he was out of it. You know, he had a chance.
Yeah. He's got a fun game and good personality, good story. I'm in on seeing him a lot more. What'd you think about Pat Reed fading today?
I didn't think much, and I didn't think much beforehand. I don't know. I just thought, you know, I thought Tron's tweet, believe it or not, was instructive. You know, that is discrimination against his ball flight. I mean, he had to kind of, he was trying to make a pretty desperate charge to get up into that cluster that was, you know, at 12 and eventually 13 under. I think he just probably, I don't know, playing to win. He just was going for it and couldn't make the birdies.
I mean, it is interesting that the days he played well were Thursday and Saturday, which were the soft days. You know, I mean,
Well,
there is probably something to it. I mean, that's Andy's take, which I love. But there's something to, you know, just the hard draw into those greens. It's like, it's a tough one.
You know, as somebody that used to hit a hard draw, you know, when you hit a hard draw, you eat hot dogs, and when you eat hit a fade, you eat filet. You know,
ball. You're like Hogan. Hogan.
Like, here's the thing with Reed. Like, to be very frank, like, so Reed went 13 greens on Thursday, 13 greens on Friday. Shot one of the most, I can't believe people haven't talked more about this. He shot 65, hitting 12 greens. He made 8 birdies and only hit 12 greens yesterday. And today he hit 8 greens. Like, simply put, like, that doesn't win you a U.S. Open.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Kepka hit 17 greens today. He hit 15 greens yesterday. He hit 14 greens the day before and 16 greens on Thursday. So, you know, Kepka's worst day was better than Reed's best day, tee to green. You know, it's, you can't win U.S. Opens without hitting the ball good.
Yeah, I mean, look, 68, 75, 65, 74. That's a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And Captain America.
He's great when conditions are soft, and you know, there's only so many pins you can get at, and it's tough to play in a wind when your ball moves one way. You know, it's hard. What do you guys think about JT and Ricky?
Yeah, I don't know. I just saw Will Gray tweeting, you know, but that like Thomas said he struggled to not like read all about his 63 on his phone yesterday. I don't know. It was just, he said, I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know that it was necessarily like unexpected after the high of yesterday. It seemed like that would have been hard to back up. You know, I don't know. I was kind of more disappointed with Ricky, really. Just not really. Again, like, it's hard to say. With Koepka shooting a 67, like, you can't fault these guys for not keeping pace with that. But I just kind of expected Ricky to not. It seemed like he played, like, a little conservatively down the stretch. I don't know. I'm not trying to go Brandel Poulter here. But I just kind of wanted a little bit more and expected a little bit more of Fowler.
I think on the JT front, I mean, I guess I'm not super familiar with his wins. I mean, I guess enough that, you know, that like they've all kind of been these like really massive margins of victory. I don't think we've really seen him go out and like grind one out quite yet. You know what I mean? Where I think when it starts to go sideways, I think that's why I just like, I'm like the biggest Spieth homer in the world is like, that guy just fights and fights and fights and fights, and he'll miss a shot and then, you know, he's back making birdie on the next hole. And it seems like when things start to go sideways with JT, I mean, he gets, you know, it's well documented that he starts throwing clubs, he starts finding things to blame, that kind of stuff. And I mean, everybody kind of externalizes things differently, I'm sure, but that's just kind of the feeling you get when you're watching him, is like, man, it just doesn't look like a guy that's gonna like dig deep and you know, fight back and get back into it.
I will say I was surprised he was, I wasn't surprised that, you know, he didn't win or was pushing at the end. I was surprised he was basically completely ejected from the broadcast by the fifth hole. Like, we just, yeah. He was done by the fifth hole. I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah. Andy? I mean, I think it's incredibly hard to back up really, really great rounds. Nothing ever seems to go right. You know, it's just something that's very hard. And it's, I think it was a bad break that he got into that last group.
Yeah.
I think if he was not in the last group, it would have been a lot better.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I think so. Fowler made the turn, and I texted some buddies, like, you know, I kind of felt like Fowler had weathered some, you know, storm, and it was like, oh, like, here's where he's, I think he ripped one on 10, you know, and it's like, oh, you know, like, this is where he could turn it on and put together a 9. And I feel like that's kind of where we've gotten with Ricky, is that he gets to this back 9 in a major, and you're waiting to see what he did at the Players happen in a U.S. Open or a Masters. Because, like, the Masters this year, he was still in it. And it just doesn't happen.
He did that yesterday. I mean, after he bogeyed the 13th, and he's kind of like, you know, after sitting on top of leaderboard for 36 holes or, you know, at near the top, he bogeys 13, and he's like, Fowler's like, you know, falling out again. And then he birdies 3 in a row, 14 through 16. And yeah, the course was harder today, but I still, like you said, I think we're just kind of expecting some, you know, one more punch there on the back 9. He didn't really do it today.
I think though, you know, you get close in golf and you have these moments of like where it doesn't go your way, and the key is just keep putting yourself in that situation. I think it's becoming where he's becoming more and more prevalent again. It's more of a matter of when, not if.
Yeah,
I mean, I think I would be surprised if he's not there again in whatever 3 or 4 weeks at Birkdale.
Speaking of Birkdale, one guy you definitely got to look at for that, Westwood. Little 151 on the weekend.
You know, Westy Island is, you know, you see, like, you know, something like a, you know, a beach town post hurricane. That's kind of the state of Westwood Island right now.
It kind of feels like one of those towns in like the Northwest that used to be like a really big like forestry place, and then kind of all these logging companies left, and now they're just like really desolate and kind of like full of crystal meth and kind of delusional people. That's what Westy Island kind of feels like to me right now.
You know, your man Big
the crackpots that are still inhabiting it are just just no sense of reality whatsoever.
I just want you to know your big man Big Leash is down 2-1 to Westy this year in tournaments.
That's so true.
We got two more. Westy, you know, he.
I would say tour championship as well, but Westwood definitely will not be there. So
this is I would say this is probably the last year for Westy.
You think?
Well, he's going to fall out of the top 50.
What was he saying about the golf course?
I don't know. That I need to. He needs to answer my tweet.
Dear sir,
because there could be I could be packing up, I could be shuttering up and out off Westy Island if he answers that the wrong way.
What did he say? I didn't actually see it.
I think that he was asking about the course in relation to par. You know, basically, Westwood likes when scores around par. Like he's not going to win.
Yeah.
He's not going to shoot 16 under.
Yeah.
But he can shoot even par. He can shoot 2 under, 4 under, 6 under.
Survivalist.
Yeah. It's, he's a fairways greens machine, and this week it didn't work out. It's, he's a guy that could go out on a really, really windy day at Birkdale and shoot like a 68 when everybody else shoots 75.
Yeah.
What did you think of how it played today? You wish it had been like that? You know, you said the 15th, you like when the 15th is a full stroke harder. And then, you know, generally the course overall was a lot. Like, that's how they wanted it to play, basically.
I mean, it still wasn't firm. You know, like,
Firmness,
like, when guys can hit shots and there's no, you know, there's no penalty for being out of position as much, you know, when the greens are soft. And, I mean, you see it week to week. It's one of the sad things about the PGA Tour is like how rarely it plays firm and fast. You know, it's the best defense because then all of a sudden when you miss the fairway, you know, it becomes that much harder to hit the green. It makes it, you know, from the fairway even, you have to be so dialed in. I mean, it firm and fast is the way to go, and that course was never firm and fast. And you know, if that place is firm and fast and it's windy, it's a disaster. You know, it might have gone the complete opposite way, where people are like, "This is out of control hard."
Look, that's my problem with all the people yesterday saying it was too easy. They're like the same people who, you know, today probably said it was boring because, you know, it was harder and more even par scores, and then they'd say it was tricked up and unfair if, you know, the leader was at 2 over or something. There's just kind of people are never happy.
I think for me, it either has to be, I mean, not just for me, I'm sure this is pretty obvious, but I think the days where it's super exciting, like yesterday, where people are making birdies and eagles and all kinds of things, I mean, obviously those are incredible to watch. And I think the days when it is brutally difficult and guys are just getting ejected constantly is when it's good to watch. And today just like felt really stuck in the middle, which I think was a lot of, you know, had a lot to do with the course being damper than they wanted to, and them having to kind of, you know, put a lot of front pins to kind of try to protect a lot of the holes and stuff. I think it just kind of, I don't know, it was kind of set up to be a good day, like in relation to par or whatever, you know, to not have another big scoring day, but it was also set up to just kind of, you know, it was set up to kind of be what it was. It was kind of a little flat and not all that crazy interesting.
So you think we're going back? That was the big thing. Like Chambers is, you know, never coming here again. And there was, you know, speculation they might get one of those, whatever, like 4 balls or something. And they didn't get that. And it seems like people think we're going to get this again, Aaron Hills.
I hope it does. I mean, I think it was, I wrote an article about this yesterday, but like this was the first U.S. Open where being long, for the most part, with the exception of guys like Jim Furyk, but like being extremely great off the tee wasn't a prerequisite. And I think that's so good for golf because like you got to see Brian Harman. Like if this is at Oakmont, Brian Harman is probably 40th. Brooks would have still won. You know, but you wouldn't have had, I don't think Xander Schauffele would be up there. Bill Haas certainly wouldn't have been on the leaderboard.
Shea Reve.
Shea Reve. I mean,
Stricker. Kuchar.
It allowed different styles of play and what makes other players great be showcased, you know? And I think that's the cool thing. Patrick Reed hitting 12 greens and shooting 65.
Yeah.
His short game was off, out of control. And that wouldn't happen if there was, you know, 8-inch rough around the greens. But
yeah, wouldn't he chip in like 3 times yesterday?
Yeah. The short grass around the greens, really great pitchers of the ball, like, feast on that, and guys like Westwood are putting and having them roll back down to their feet.
Right. Can I bring that up for a second? I love how the U.S. Open, those chipping areas, the U.S. Open makes these terms of art, and closely mown became a noun. Like, oh, yeah, you hit it to the closely mown. Like, it's just like faxing, these guys just throwing these terms out. It's ridiculous. The kettle moraine, I love it. Like, only at the U.S. Open does these terms just become, you know, ubiquitous. Closely moans.
What do you guys think? Coming back?
I hope so. I loved it. I mean, I thought it was awesome. I think anytime, you know, I'm biased, of course, but anytime you go to the Midwest, I think you get awesome crowds of, like, good golf fans and people who are like pretty hungry for these kinds of tournaments and support them well and all that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, yeah, I was all in. I mean, I think they got a little unlucky with some poorly timed rain, but other than that, I mean, I don't really think you can, I don't think you can say anything bad about it. I mean, good winter, good, you know, good setup. Everything was good, I thought.
Yeah. I'm totally fine with it going back. I think it's just, you get this hostility to new venues because there is so much competition and there are so many classic courses, even just in the Midwest, that you want majors going to that are kind of off the rota. And I guess that's my one lament, is that, like, you need property to accommodate these. And maybe the course layout is sometimes secondary to the operations being able to set up across the property.
And that's where it seems like the USGA is kind of doing a cool thing. I mean, I'm sure if you're a member at one of these, like, really classic courses, you're not into this trend, but, you know, this kind of model that they're building now, where they're kind of building these golf courses specifically to host US Opens, is, you know, it's just interesting, I think. And, like, that's kind of what they did with Chambers Bay, it feels like. And, you know, I think it backfired. I still low key think that a US Open's going to go back to Chambers Bay, not for a long time, but I think it will. Just because, I don't know, I feel like they, like, got so much skin in the game when they developed these venues that way. And I don't know, I'm kind of cool with it. It's basically them kind of building their stadiums around the country, basically.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and, like, let's keep in mind that Aaron Hills was up against Cog Hill number 4, which got a restoration. Just got the character just wiped right off its face. And, like, frankly, I wouldn't even say it's one of the 50 best courses in Chicago anymore. So,
oh, wow,
it's sad what happened to that course.
It's crazy.
So, as much as I would have loved, like, the 20-minute drive from my apartment there, it wouldn't have been as good as Aaron Hills. So,
are there any upcoming Chicago majors?
No.
Nothing on the radar, I don't think,
you
right?
Know, we've got Medina, which is, you know, the PGA thing.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't think it really, like, doesn't get the juices flowing.
Yeah, I agree.
Olympia Fields, the problem is it's south of the city, so you don't have, like, the fan base. Like, you where you draw fans for golf tournaments is from the north and the west. So you need it, you know, to be in one of those two areas. Butler is the course that would be the ideal US Open course. I mean, that place could host it tomorrow. But they are all men. And if I forgot my shoes, my fiance would have to drop them off at the gate. So
don't think that's gonna fly.
Not good.
I don't think Diana Murphy's going there anytime soon. So
yeah, I don't think so.
Until they drop that, I don't think we'll get anything big for a while. I just don't think we have great golf courses. We don't have Shinnecock. We don't have Marion. We just don't have one of those pedigree. We don't have Oakmont. You know, Shinnecock should be awesome though. I heard they're widening fairways. And
the trend is real.
And they've been expanding greens. So we should see a lot of what we saw at Erin Hills at Shinnecock.
Awesome. I think that speaks to the question, is the USGA woke?
I think that's more Shinnecock's woke. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, I feel like the USGA's got kind of carte blanche over what happens at a lot of these venues, right?
Well, they're getting it back to the original design.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's just the overall trend of classic courses is getting green sizes back, getting fairways back to original widths, and it's a way better golf. We saw it this week. It's just when the fairways are wide, it lets all types of players play. It's not just who can hit their driver best.
Yeah.
So let's do a quick overrated, underrated.
Let's do it.
John Rahm.
Ooh. Oof.
Wow.
That's a good one. Brendan, I'll let you go first.
I will say underrated. I think the backlash was just too hot this week. So now he's gone to he was catching a little too much trendy hype, and now he's back to being underrated because people think he's, you know, too hot.
Yeah, I agree. I think he was so underrated that he became overrated, which makes him underrated.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
What about?
I'm in on throwing bunker rigs.
Punching signs.
Love it.
I'm still in on him. I like we talked about with JT. It's tough when things start going the wrong way, but underrated. Backlash was high. Siwoo Kim.
Ooh, underrated.
Underrated. It's just a killer. I watched him last night. I'm such a fan. He did a flash. He did a press conference with no translator. You know, I love it. He's just a killer. Well, all these other guys are antsy. He's just like deadpan, ready to go out and carve it up.
Yeah, you know, I was watching live from last night, and finally, you know, Brandel was like, you know, we might need to look at last year's statistics instead of this year's and realize that this guy made it to the, you know, tour championship. Yeah. It's like,
right.
like when you see a series of withdrawals from tournaments and missed cuts, like there's serious, probably something going wrong, you know?
Yeah. I think he would be a good, I know you guys both love the player A, player B, take the names away comparison. And if you said, you know, you have this 21-year-old kid who has won a player's, won another tour event, made it to the tour championship, all this stuff. I mean, like, if he was, you know, named Michael Smith instead of Siwoo Kim, I think he would probably be a lot more popular, frankly. See, I mean, it's one of those things that, like, I don't know what else he can do to, like, show people how good he is.
Here's a good question, good follow-up on this. Like, who's got a more impressive career, him or John Rahm?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think
John Rahm has the benefit of just us knowing more about him because he went to college here and because he played some other tour events before getting his card and all that kind of stuff. He just had a little bit of, like, built-in cachet, but again, kind of the player A, player B. Like right now, you have to say Siwoo Kim, right?
He's younger too.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, John Rahm.
21.
Yeah, John Rahm's 22 or 23. So, you know, it's kind of crazy. So I had another one. What did I have? Oh.
How about Fox?
Fox.
Overrated, underrated.
Underrated. Underrated. I think there's just still that stigma attached from Chambers. But like, you know, people have watched the last 2 years, know that they've improved a bit. What do you think, Andy?
I love how many golf shots they show. I don't think Jackson
is laboring.
Good. You know?
Really?
Yeah.
How good was having Gil Hance on there?
It was good. But here's the thing, is like they didn't let Gil Hance like really go in, you know? That's something that bothered me, is they have this world class architect up there, and they put who do they put next to him some of the time? They had Darren Clark next to him.
Clark, yeah.
It's like, let this guy like go in. Like, what, Gil Hance for 30 seconds? Like, he can do stuff, but like, give him like a real thing and let him, like, he knows what, you know, and have somebody help him and say like, hey, this is this type of player. Like, explain why they're playing well here. You know, explain why this is doing, like, why this is happening. Explain, like, and that is what, you know, like, you had this guy here, and he said some insightful things, but they never took something to the next level where I was like, whoa. Like, you know, like, this is, like, you know, and I think that's the thing they're missing out on, is that they, I don't know if it's, they don't have anybody there that can, like, that can coach Gil up to that, to get to that point. And maybe that, like, there's the issue where you could, you know, say like, let's talk about that, you know, like, and once you lead him into the right direction, he probably would come up with pure gold. But I feel like he never got led into the right spot.
I think even just having him have a seat at the table, so to speak, is like a good step in the right direction, because I think a lot of the former players are really good. Johnny comes to mind for sure, as guys who can put you in the moment and like describe what's going on. But a lot of them, I mean, have a tendency to, you know, Darren Clark was okay. I don't know that I really heard anything from him that was like, went beyond kind of cliche and like, you know, kind of taking up space. But so I think having a really, really, really smart non-player at the table, I think is good just for balance.
I guess my like one kind of, I don't know, I hate playing like media ombudsman all the time because the stuff's hard, but I guess like what you're saying is I think there's like too many people at the table sometimes. And granted, when you're on the air for more than 9 hours, like you can't have, I just want more of their best people. And I know that's hard when you have like a 9+ hour broadcast, but like, I don't know, it just seemed like there were too many people. Like they'd throw it to Holly Saunders, who like does like a 15-second introduction of like a Shane O'Donohue video essay on like the fields of Wisconsin, you know? Like it just felt like there's too many people doing, not getting enough exposure. You know, you want more of the best people. But
see, that's kind of my point, is like, I don't think they gave Gil enough time to really, let him get what he could have given out. Like, there is so much he could have. This golf course was like an architecture nirvana for a modern architect, because like it was, you know, it had so many little like intricacies and so many little things. And in like just talking about like what happened with the leaderboard was, you never see this at a US Open. And like they never let Gil talk about, hey, why did Ricky, like what did this course do that made the top three guys, Rory, Jason Day, and Dustin Johnson, missed the cut? That wouldn't have happened at Oakmont, you know?
Right.
Why did this happen here? You know, in trying to kick it over and give him something where he could say, like, this is why.
Right.
But did you think yeah, overrated, underrated? I don't think he gave a verdict.
I think underrated. I think a lot of, I don't disagree with anything that you're saying. I mean, I think there's room for improvement. But there's always room for improvement.
We all said underrated too.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of the stuff that they kind of quote unquote messed up is stuff that's really ticky tack that I don't really care about, and it's messing up the name of the girlfriend. Like, I mean, I don't care about that. Like, whatever, just do a good job, like showing the golf. And I think that kind of their outside the course stuff. Like, I keep bringing it up, but I'm dead serious. Like, the Ken Brown brownie point stuff about how the holes were playing was so awesome. I was like, made everybody in the room stop talking when those came up, because like, you learn so much about like these holes. And I tweeted something about it, but like, my favorite part about that was just, it's such a good indicator of like how quote unquote easy it is to like make impactful segments on these broadcasts. Yep. And like, what they did with those things was they went out there with one camera. They took one take. There were no cuts. It's just Ken Brown riffing. And it probably took 6 minutes to shoot that thing. I mean, he knew what he was going to talk about when he got out there, but like, it's not like it requires a huge graphics package and a huge, like, you know, a camera crew shooting for 3 days to get all the B-roll for these features. Like, no, just like take somebody who really is passionate and knows exactly what they're talking about and has a good personality and can carry a segment, and just turn them loose and let them go do that. And I think that's what you don't see on the week-to-week telecasts, at least not nearly often enough. And I think that the other thing was they did do a lot of the big features and the big kind of like essays and packages and stuff. And I thought a lot of those were, you know, I think a lot of times those segments have a tendency to answer questions that like nobody's asking or like care about. And sure. These segments were all like, I thought they were all did a great job of like explaining something that you either were curious about or should be curious about. And like, they did a really, really good job with that. And our boy, our boy Bacon did well as well. That's always fun. Always fun to see.
Cool to see him up on the big screen. I would just say, you know, I know those segments, like they have to do some tape segments, because to break up the live stuff, sometimes they're sold and advertisers, things like that. Like, yeah, that's exactly what you should do. And maybe because like it appeals to us because we're already in the boat, like we're golf nerds, we're watching this, we don't need like, you know, the emotional essay on whatever else. But like him just with a whiteboard and like a basketball, or yesterday with the balls, like showing us the slope of the green, was had me locked in. I was completely locked in. And the other times, like when we do those tape bits for whatever, a normal PGA Tour broadcast, I'm like, you know, wandering off and looking at something on my computer. I just don't care. But I was locked in.
So I don't know. I think it's good. I think it's only gonna get better. Yeah. And actually, I think it kind of, a lot of the stuff, I mean, everybody points at like the ProTracer stuff, but like there's a lot of things that I think, you know, the CBS and NBC producers are probably watching that broadcast very, very carefully and looking at a lot of these ways that, you know, they're incorporating things that you don't see on a week-to-week basis. So hopefully it kind of keeps pushing the ball forward, or pushing the stick higher or lower, whatever the metaphor is.
Hey, last one. Par.
It's the most overrated thing there is.
It just doesn't matter. Like, you're going to get consensus here. It doesn't matter. It's overrated.
Par's over.
It's so dumb. It really has... It doesn't matter at all. Like, to me, to a certain extent, Johnny's right.
Oh, yeah. Johnny's always right.
JT,
how much would you have paid to have Johnny in Azinger's seat today? Watching JT.
Well, I think what got buried yesterday was him, you know, calling it the Milwaukee Open and calling it like an easy setup. But those were like the headliners. But what got buried was like the other quotes, like the specialness of my round is not altered by this. I did this in the final round, the US Open at Oakmont. The specialness, he said, the specialness of my round is completely not impacted. This does not hold up to it.
So
I agree. How could you disagree?
I texted ZB last night and I was like, what is Andy, his caddy who caddied for Johnny?
Yeah.
What does Andy think about this? And he texted back, he goes, oh, Andy says Johnny's was 5 shots better. At least.
Oh man, that's great.
5 shots better. At least.
So good.
I mean, hey, that guy.
He's great. He would have been on there today, like DJ said, just roasting. You know, JT's like, I told you, the specialness of my route. You can't, you know, it's just different dynamic.
It's one round. Thing to do it on a Saturday. It's another to do it on a Sunday.
That's right.
Hey, can I throw one at you, Andy, real quick?
Yeah.
Do you think it's overrated or underrated? Is it wise or crooked to with the misdirection of an Illinois grad actually wearing Badger red in Wisconsin?
You know, I heard that his daughter plays on the Wisconsin golf team. Some pod listeners inform me, but
sounds like you're flip flopping.
No, it's still very dishonest.
I think it's just good marketing. I think he's just playing to the crowd.
Yeah, it's like the guy with like a Lakers sticker on his bumper and a Yankee sticker on his bumper. Just let's more see people in the boat.
Let's more see at the John Deere Classic what he wears. I bet he'll have a little blue and orange out there.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways.
You can. It's a nuanced position. You're all about nuance.
You know, I...
Everything's not black and white.
Just broadening his base.
I think he knows he lives in Madison. He knows who butters his bread. You know?
Yeah.
He knows that, you know, when he hits the senior tour, there's going to be some... It's going to be some more local sponsorships, you know?
I'll tell you what, he's got his Champions Tour event next week.
Yeah.
They plan it in...
At U Ridge in Madison.
Champaign, or are they playing it in Madison?
It's just...
The daughter is a good cover. That makes sense.
Yeah. He's okay. What, hey, leave Stricker alone. I'm sick of everyone piling on Stricker all the time.
when...
Just let the guy be.
Let me tell you, how about he surged to beat Jordan Niebrugge. He almost lost low Wisconsin.
It's true.
Oh, wow.
He won low Illini. Predicted.
I don't even know if he is an Illini anymore.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah, we'll end it on that depressing note.
All right, well, good week. Thanks for all the takes, Andy. It's good stuff.
Andy, brilliant stuff this week on the course. Really, really appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, I do what I can. Not all heroes wear capes, right?
A shining light in the darkness of ignorant takes.
Well, you know, I did actually break my rule and talk about how far somebody hits it.
That's true.
So,
and well, it was of note.
Yeah. But then
Cameron
Champ. Yeah, then I misled Porath into a blade collar Sean Foley vortex.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, he's a nuanced character.
Yeah. Hey, overrated, underrated Sean Foley.
Oof. I feel like he used to be overrated.
Yep.
And now it's cooled so that he might be underrated now.
Totally the Rob thing. He got so overrated that he became underrated now, I think.
Exactly.
So,
you know, I'm going to go overrated just because Brandel and him teamed up to do, like, some segment together.
I saw that.
And
it
it made me cringe. How did Brandel do that?
It's pretty weak principle.
He gave in.
Yeah,
I was shocked when I saw that.
I got you.
It's a forthcoming show or something. It sounds like, but they used some footage this week. I was shocked when I saw that.
That's good to see guys bury the hatchet.
Yeah, there can be peace in this world.
Yeah, exactly.
There can, but do you think that was because of crookedness?
I don't know. It's a topic for the next podcast.
We'll leave it up in the air. We'll let the listeners.
That's good. This podcast provides more questions than answers, which is good.
Exactly what you want.
Yeah. Any great art.
All right. You guys have a great night and actually a really exciting week next week at the Travelers. Great field.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
1, 2, and 3 in the world, I think.
You know, there might be rumors that the Travelers is the new U.S. Open.
That's what a lot of people are saying.
Yeah, Phil.
Many people are saying that.
Yeah,
Phil believes that, right? Is he
drivable par 4, 15? You know, they were there first.
Yeah,
that's the one question. And I know we're wrapping up. That's the one question. Would Brooks have won? Is there an asterisk on this U.S. Open without Phil or first major without Phil or Tiger since 1994? You know, again, I don't have the answer. I think we're just, you know, providing more questions than answers. Let the listeners decide.
I got a great story from the media.
It's more like the listener, I guess, an hour and 5 minutes into the podcast.
We said we were going to do this like in 30 minutes. So this is a phenomenal story from the media center this week.
Oh, God.
I went to say hello to Jay Rigdon, who I'd never met before. And
good guy.
Great guy. And right next to him is this guy. I forgot his name. And he just pipes into our conversation and he goes, you know, I talked to Bones today for about 15, 20 minutes. He says Phil is going to try and come.
And I was it Solly wasn't even there this week.
So I turned and I, you know, this guy's never met me. I turned and I looked at him and I go, you know what I'm tired of? Talking about a guy that has zero chance to win this tournament. And I turned back to Jay. I kept talking.
Wow. Savage.
It was
Andy is better than anyone I know, completely just icing down someone looking for a conversation. Saw it at the players firsthand, but he just completely puts a wall up and shoots it down right away. Amazing, amazing, preeminent talent. That just
you must be really you must be really fun in elevators.
You know, I don't want people to get a wrong impression. I am very friendly, but you know, I didn't want to talk about Phil. I'd already seen 8,000 stories written about the same thing with no update. Stories every day about the same exact thing, and I really didn't want to hear about it.
Man.
So we'll now end on that note.
All right.
All right.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Have a good one.
Yeah.